Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Mark was so excited he could hardly wait to get home to see his son. On the business trip, he had found time to go to the city's biggest toy store, and he had just picked out the most amazing construction set he'd ever seen. He just knew 5-year-old Corey would be enchanted with it. When he walked in the door, Corey came running up to him breathless. "Dad, wait till you see what my friend Timmy and I made. It's a house for Rover." Mark smiled and took off his coat. "That's great, sport, but wait till you see what I've got for you." He began to unload his briefcase and his suitcase and retrieve the present from his luggage. "Rover's outside in his new house, Dad. Come see."
"Just a minute. I'm going to show you something I bought for you while I was away."
Mark pulled out the treasured gift and handed it to Corey.
"You're going to love it."
Corey managed a smile.
"Jumbo Constructos. Thanks, Dad."
"Don't you want to get started with these?" Mark suggested. "I'm going to just wash up for dinner and go say hi to Mom. Then I'll come back and see what you made with this new set."
"Yeah."
Corey's face fell. After his dad left the room, he put the box down and headed back outside. From a parent's perspective, how can we best support what is really important to our children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today is well-versed in tips for parenting in our commercial world. Betsy Taylor is founder and president of the nonprofit family organization Center for a New American Dream. The center is dedicated to helping American families return to basic values and a more fulfilling, less consumeristic life. She's written a book called What Kids Really Want That Money Can't Buy. Betsy has 2 teenagers, a son and a daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Betsy.
Thanks for having me.
We've heard about the organization you founded called the Center for a New American Dream. Would you tell us something about it?
Sure. The center was set up really to support families who want to resist excessive materialism, excessive commercialism in our society, and to give them tangible, hands-on ways to support their kids and staying in touch with the things that are more important.
In your book, What Kids Really Want That Money Can't Buy, you differentiate between the commercialism of our culture and the importance of kids' non-material needs. Aren't our kids materialistic, too? I can imagine in that story another kid would have said, "Wow, Jumbo Constructos, great!"
Well, you know, absolutely. Our kids want material things. We all know that. I don't know any parent that hasn't been nagged for, you know, a video game or the latest fashion. And that's part of our American society. And that's not all bad by any means, but it's a question of balance. And I think so many parents feel that our children are bombarded with messages telling them to buy, to get their whole sense of who they are through their stuff. And many, many parents are troubled by this. So it's all a question of balance. Our kids obviously need and want some consumer goods. They should have them. But they also very much want the non-material parts of life, time with Mom and Dad, time to just be kids.
Why are tangible rewards from parents an unwise choice? Why is this kind of routine, like we heard in the story, not such a great idea?
Well, it's a great story. And, you know, I'm sure that dad was trying to express love. And so many of us are forced to be away from our kids from time to time. We're forced to work long hours. And sometimes we do buy our kids things in a way, maybe out of guilt or maybe out of just wanting to connect with our children. And that, again, I don't think that's necessarily bad myself. I think it differs from family to family. But if that becomes the substitute for going out in the backyard and stopping enough to pay attention to your child's real needs, that little boy needed that daddy to pick him up and walk out in the backyard and say, "Wow, you did that by yourself with your friend? Rover's going to be so happy now." And we all know that. But we're so busy, and so many of us as parents have our own stresses in today's world, and we forget to just stop and pay attention to those little voices saying, "Come on, Dad, I want to show you that. I want to show you something I made."
In your book, you so helpfully list explicit non-material needs of children. Would you give us some additional examples?
Oh, sure. Well, just again, at the Center for New American Dream, we actually did a survey. We sent out a survey around the country. We also did a contest that we ran through Family Circle magazine and other magazines. And we asked this question, what do you want that money can't buy? And we had over 2,000 children respond with art and essays.
What were the ages of the kids?
The kids were ages 5 to 17, all backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read the essays and I looked at the art, I giggled, I cried. It was magnificent, really.
Sure.
The kids themselves are saying they want more time with their parents. Now, that may come as a shock to the parents of teenagers, but if you get underneath that, maybe that cool exterior, they are saying, I need my mom and dad. So that was a huge one. I remember one girl, 15-year-old, just talking about her schedule and her parents' schedule and how she had almost no time with her parents. So that's a big one. They want time with their mom and dad. They want time outside. And I think part of what's happened in our society with our higher levels of fear, both parents and the workforce many times, parents are worried about letting their children run free the way they used to, and that's understandable. But I think as parents, we need to take special steps to connect our children to the outdoors because there's something about it that is nourishing, whether it's walking in the woods, playing in the dirt, watching the clouds. These are things we took for granted that kids today don't take for granted, but they need and they want. So time with nature, time with mom and dad, time with friends. The big one was time. I was amazed at the number of children who drew pictures of clocks. It was just amazing. You know, they could have said anything in response to that question. What do you really want that money can't buy? But so many of them said, time. Give me some space to just be a kid.
That's such a comment on the kinds of lives we lead. We always think those of us in big cities are always on fast forward, but
right.
It sounds like Western society is on fast forward.
Well, we are. Of course, American adults are working more hours a year and have less vacation than any other group of adults in the industrial world. And our children have far less leisure time than they had even 10 years ago. More homework, more scheduled activities, longer school years, longer school days. And it's all squeezing out that spaciousness that children need to develop their own imagination, to hang out with a grandparent, a cousin, a friend, a neighbor. Those quiet, slow times are when we connect more deeply with other human beings and explore the inner world.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of what kids really want that money can't buy.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Betsy Taylor about what kids really want that money can't buy. It sounds like we almost don't trust ourselves to let our kids alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many negative forces coming at our kids today, you know, whether it's the internet or television or radio or pop-up ads. You know, I think so many parents feel that they have to keep their kids scheduled all the time because if they don't, they're going to get into some trouble. And of course, there's some legitimacy to that when a lot of those forces are negative. But what kids themselves are saying is, stop working so hard, stop doing so much, let's go ice skating, let's make some cookies, take me fishing, show me something about your life, Dad, that I don't even know what you do at work. Take me to work one day. I mean, these are the kinds of stories that came out through the book of kids just begging for their parents to slow down and pay attention.
It's almost like kids are asking for a simpler time.
Well, I think we all are.
Grown-ups are.
I think we all are. So how do you handle that? And I think on an individual level, there are many things that we can do. We can ask ourselves, how many activities should our kid, in fact, be in? Are they getting stressed out? Is it the child that's asking for all this programming, or is it us? So limiting some of that, limiting their exposure to commercialism is critical to helping them stay grounded in what really matters.
And how do we do that?
Well, I think the most important thing, if you have young children, the number one thing you can do to protect your children, quite frankly, and almost all of the family experts would agree with this, is that for children below the age of 5, turn off commercial television. Children below the age of 5 can't actually distinguish between a program and an advertisement. Mm-hmm. So when they see an ad telling them that if they eat this potato chip, they are going to be the most popular boy on the street, they really believe it. They really think that that's actually true. So limit that. If you need a break, put on an educational or nature video. So that's number one. And I would say limit commercial television throughout childhood. The second thing we can do is, of course, talk to our kids about commercialism. We're bombarded with commercialism. It's just part of the American and world culture. We, according to Business Week, we get 3,000 ads a day coming at our kids through all the different mediums, whether it's just the fashion logos, the radio, the TV, the newspaper, the magazines. But there's 3,000 messages that come at them a day saying, you will be happy if you buy this. You will be cool if you buy this. And it's just the background noise. So it's very important to take maybe 3 or 4 weeks very consciously and say, let's take on advertising. And you can start this as early as 4 or 5, or you can pick it up at 13 or 14. And if they're older, you say, look, I know you guys are totally hip on advertising. I don't need to tell you about that, but just let's just play a little game here. You see that TV ad and sit down, watch it together. Can you just analyze what they're doing with that ad for me? How are they selling that product? What are they selling? How do they use color? How do they use music? How are they convincing you should buy it? And get kids to analyze ads for maybe a few weeks. And it's like giving them an inoculation. They then feel empowered to look at all of these things coming to them. And the first thing they do is to sort of take it apart a little bit. And then they say, well, do I really want it? And they might really want it, whatever it is. You know, they might say, I want it. But if you don't teach children about advertising, their first response is, I want it. And there's no barrier there. It creates warfare in the household. The parents are saying no because they don't think it's right for the child for whatever reasons. Maybe it's a bad influence. Maybe they just don't need it. Maybe you can't afford it. Whatever the reason for the parent, the child wants it. So talk to them.
I think that what you're bringing out also brings you together with your child. It's also time spent with the child in a very productive way.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a way of respecting your child. It's saying, you're smart enough to figure this out. If they're older, you need to obviously almost assume they already know, but they might not. They might not have ever done this. Mm-hmm. If they're younger, you make it a game. You say, Bobby, let's look at that. Let's look at this commercial together. Now, what do you think they're doing there? And do you really think you're going to be a Superman if you just eat that hamburger? Isn't that dumb? I mean, you can play with it. Or if you're older, obviously the whole tone is different. But I would also say that perhaps even more important than limiting exposure to commercialism, teaching your children about how commercialism works, every time you say no, try to say yes to something else. So perhaps most important is really spending time with your kids doing the old-fashioned non-material things that human beings have always done together. And sometimes that means really being awake and paying attention, because we're not encouraged to do that. We're not encouraged to go bicycling with no goal in mind. We're encouraged to get into competitive sports and achieve as highly as possible. We're not encouraged to just teach our children to sew because there's not really a need to anymore. We're not encouraged to tell stories about great-grandparents. But those things really matter.
It's interesting when you were talking about the time spent. It's almost like an advertisement for extended family. If you're lucky enough to have extended family around, this is what grandparents were invented for. And
absolutely
special. Yeah. We can all remember special times, if we're very lucky, special times with grandparents or an aunt or an uncle, somebody who didn't have the underlying agenda of making sure we learned our manners or making sure we learned our multiplication tables or whatever it was, and just enjoyed being with us.
Right.
So that's
it's
another
funny.
Thing.
We almost get guilty if we're not doing something very goal oriented. It's part of the fantastic American character that we're just so productive and creative and innovative. But it also, I think, sometimes overtakes us, and we lose touch with the very simple pleasures that people have always had together.
Betsy, you mention in the book spirituality as something kids crave. How can we foster this?
Oh, that's such a great question. So many children wrote in about God, about from all different religious backgrounds, about the importance of God in their lives or the importance of a spiritual life. Now, this will differ with different families, Christian families, Jewish families, Muslim families. We have many families in our society, and it's part of our strength in America. But the important thing is to stop and pay attention to your children's hunger to be connected to something bigger than themselves. So clearly, if you have a strong faith, you're probably already sharing it with your child. It's probably already a key part of your family tradition. And what I heard from the children was they want that. They want to share in your traditions. If you are a person who's left organized religion and maybe is searching or isn't quite, you know, maybe you yourself don't even know what you believe, that's okay, because that can be a person's reality, of course. But what I was so touched by with the children was the number who said, I really want to know that there's something bigger than me that I can lean on, something bigger than me that's making sense out of the world. I want to make the world a better place. So many children wrote that. Mm-hmm. This is fantastic. So I think regardless of your tradition, setting aside time for solitude, for some prayer, of course, actually doing some spiritual journaling, no matter what your tradition is, you can have a journal. We did this with my kids. We created spiritual journals, and we drew actually from different traditions. We're Quakers, and we had the children take verses from the Bible that were particularly meaningful to my husband and me, and we shared them. But also we took great speeches from Lincoln, his speech about democracy and human nature, and we took Martin Luther King's dream of people coming together. And these things can be treasures for our kids, you know, in hard times. We never know what's going to happen. And if they have a journal with some of the great wisdom and spiritual words of great teachers, whether it's Abraham in the Bible or Martin Luther King or whoever it might be that has brought meaning to your life, share that with your children. It will help them in the tough times and in the good times.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of what kids really want that money can't buy.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Betsy Taylor about what kids really want that money can't buy.
Talking about changing the whole world, you talked about that the kids were very interested in that. What kinds of things can you suggest that would resonate with kids that they could realistically do? It's so hard. Right. They feel so powerless. They're so just vulnerable and young.
Well, you know, I sometimes think we all feel powerless because the world has so many complex problems. We've seen so much of that over the last few years in our country. And yet, I think all of us as humans in some way know that we're deeply connected to all others. And there's some part of us that wants to know we're doing our bit. We don't have to solve it all. And this came out in a huge way in the book that I wrote. Again, when we did the survey and asked kids what they really want that money can't buy, I was just flabbergasted at the number who wrote in and said, I want to end homelessness. I want to make our environment so beautiful that all the giraffes and rhinos and elephants will be living for my great-grandchildren. I want to have clean air. I want peace among all people. These were just beautiful drawings and essays from the kids. It made you cry. It made you feel good that they were wanting this. So how can we as parents help? We're busy, we're tired, we're trying to pay the bills, we're trying to hold it all together. I again think it's so important to stop. One of the things that we've done with our kids is, well, several things, but one is to join with other families in the neighborhood so that we do charitable activities together. So, for example, each year we put together gift boxes for children in a homeless shelter, and we collectively pull a little bit of money, and then the children decorate boxes and fill the boxes with mittens and hats and candy, and we deliver them. And the kids get such a warm and fuzzy feeling. So something like that is appropriate for young children, and it's a way to develop empathy, because our world, you know, advertising, commercialism, it's all about saying you're the center of the universe. That's what ads are about. That's what all the stuff coming at our kids is saying, you're at the center. And in many ways, our society encourages a focus on the self. What can I get? What do I want? How do I get ahead? But it's very important for parents to nurture a sense of community, a sense of connection to others, a responsibility. And kids really respond to that. It's a way of respecting them, empowering them to be self-reliant agents for change as they grow older. So for teenagers, you know, one thing is obviously just to get involved with cleanup projects in the community. Almost every community has that. You can help out at a soup kitchen, or you might be a more political family. For some families, it might be getting involved with a march against gun violence, or it might be involved with some other issue that really matters to you, that in your heart you really believe will make the world a better place. And regardless of your political perspective, all of us want the world to be more peaceful, want it to be more environmentally safe for our kids. And there's more than enough to do.
It's interesting. One of the things that I think is always working with kids is the fact that they feel that they're only one person.
Mm-hmm.
And in not their lifetime, but our lifetime, we saw the effectiveness of something like the civil rights movement, where it took lots of people all banding together.
Absolutely.
And I would think if they learn the history of that or other similar movements where it took a whole lot of people just working together to get something done.
Right.
That's
a great, great comment. And clearly one of the things we can do to encourage this is to actually select out books for our children which hold up some of these fantastic leaders, Harriet Tubman, some of the great people, Katie Stanton for Women's Rights, wonderful books about her. And so helping them have these role models, but also remembering for ourselves and for our kids that what we do really matters, but we are not alone. Changing anything means working with others. And I think part of it is also realizing when you work with others, you don't always see the immediate results, but there's a tapestry of people working, and over time, amazing things happen. We couldn't anticipate that the Berlin Wall would suddenly fall. It took many, many years of people pushing for human rights and justice. And suddenly, in a few days, it crumbled. It was just remarkable. So I think telling those stories, telling them about Nelson Mandela being in jail for 23 years, and then ultimately inviting his jailer to come to his presidential ceremony. You know, we emerge from a society divided by white and black, and there's unity. There's always problems, but there are also victories. So I think the key thing is to slow down enough to know that this matters to your child, mm-hmm. and get involved with something. At my own organization, we have a program called Turn the Tide, which is on our website. And it's 10 simple things that a person can do, very simple things where you get immediate feedback. And kids can do them too. One of the steps is eating one less beef meal a week. You can still eat your hamburgers, but it's just eating a little less, and it quantifies how much water and energy we save. So there are little things you can do that when a lot of people do them add up.
Speaking of adding up, what kinds of resources would you suggest for parents to be able to use to help their kids start this path?
Well, I guess I'll start first, of course, with my own organization. If you go to newdream.org, our website, www.newdream.org, there are a lot of free resources around commercialism and children. There's a brochure that you can download called Tips for Parenting in a Commercial World, with all sorts of ideas on how to protect your children from advertising. I would also recommend looking at another section of the website, simplifytheholidays.org. We all know that our holidays have become very commercialized, birthdays, Christmas, and this is a section which gives people ideas for alternative gift giving and alternative ways to celebrate special occasions without having to go hog wild with buying and going into debt. I think that there are many books that are worthy of consideration. One might be Reviving Ophelia, which is a very interesting book by Mary Pfeiffer about parenting adolescent girls, because I think adolescent girls really have to struggle in our society to get a true identity, and the culture, the commercialism is tough on girls. It encourages them to focus on sexuality and a coolness, which isn't always so good for the girls. So Reviving Ophelia is a book that I particularly like. I think it's easy for parents to sort of feel guilty or to feel inadequate and to feel like they're just losing it in this society. And the key thing is to just slow down and know you love your child. It's going to be fine. Your child's going to pull through. But to try both to improve your quality of life and theirs, to slow down, scale back a little bit, and spend more time doing the old-fashioned things that you remember from your own childhood. What are the memories you have from your own childhood that are a little magical? It's probably not crawling from one mall to the next. It's there could have been a great shopping experience in there. No question, I have one in my memory. But for the most part, I certainly remember things like making chain daisy necklaces with my friends, or lying out and watching the clouds and trying to figure out what the patterns meant, or getting together with extended family and cousins and playing. And to the extent you can hold on to your stories, because each of us is different, and then bring that to your child's life as a real point of intention, I think this is one of the greatest gifts we can give.
Well, you have given us all a very great gift of giving lots of examples and suggestions for how we can slow down, simplify, and bring our children something much more important than anything money could buy. So, Betsy Taylor, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Betsy Taylor's book, What Kids Really Want That Money Can't Buy: Tips for Parenting in a Commercial World. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell everything. It's hard to get the message clearly on the phone sometimes. Mention show 207. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, the second edition, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our special thanks to Bonneville International Corporation for their generous donation in support of this show. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.